Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Before we dive in all about the hip, I'm so excited to announce we have a brand new challenge. We're bringing the Gen Health community really together, and we're all going to do the full body low impact plan starting on August 1st. So starting on a Monday, if you get in right now, you'll have your free week access. You can check it out, but don't start with us just yet. So if you click on the link below, it's gen.health/low impact. It's going to take you exactly to the Gen Health full body low impact page so that there's no confusion. You're not going anywhere else, and this is all you need. It is only $24.99. We've never had a challenge this low before, and it's going to be exactly the same as we always have. Part of the full body low impact, you're going to have strength, mobility, mobility flows, core foundations, and muscle activation. So you're really going to get a well-rounded view of your entire body from the basics, really building up. And a part of every one of my challenges is that it's not just about exercises. It's not just about what to do, but I am giving you full education on your body. So if you've liked any of my YouTube videos, any of these podcasts, any of my Instagram, I go into detail as we're going through the movements together because I want you to understand your basics from this foundational level of your body so that you can go out and do any movement and feel so good in your body. So this is your opportunity to start. This is only our phase one of this program. We also have two other phases. We also have 10 other plans with multiple phases if you want to and decide to stay on. But right now it's just $24.99. That is it. If you don't feel like staying on with us, you can always leave. However, we hope that you stay a part of our community. We have an incredible community. I'm going to be showing up with you every single week. Every week, I'm going to come on and answer questions, go over body tips, go over more form, modifications, progression, so that you really have a solid understanding of your body. I want you to feel good, and this full body low impact is a great place to start, especially if you got a taste of the Move to Improve challenge or you missed out on the Move to Improve challenge. This is your opportunity to come in, win some incredible prizes. So this is, we're treating this exactly like a challenge. We want you to show up. We want to provide as much accountability and community as possible. So we're going to give you prizes as well for those who show up and post and are a part of this incredible community. Now, this is your opportunity. I hope that you get in with us. It's just gen.health/low impact, $24.99. That's it, to move with us through August and have that motivation, accountability, and community. So we're going to talk about hip dysplasia today, which, you know, surprisingly might affect quite a bit of people and really just hip instability in general. So yeah. When we're talking specifically about dysplasia, that's something you've been born with. So congenitally from, you know, the time you were either born or you were developing, something was happening in your hip that created a very shallow socket.
Yeah. And as all disorders or as all labeled things in medicine, like this is a spectrum. So there's a massive spectrum of what it can mean to have hip dysplasia. And like Jen said, the socket, like our ball and socket joint in our hip, it's our femur, the head of our femur, and our acetabulum, which is on our pelvis, and how those fit together, right? And we're just saying that when you have hip dysplasia, it just kind of means that you have a fairly shallow acetabulum on your pelvis that doesn't quite fully encapsulate or fit around that femur head, which can cause a pretty great degree of instability there.
Right, exactly. And so especially when we're looking at kids and we're kind of evaluating this, they are looking a little bit at posture because we're looking at leg length discrepancy that can happen as well when you're standing. And you're looking at, you know, how much range of motion do you have within those hips? And sometimes there's a lot more limited range because you just don't have that security in that ball and socket joint.
Yeah, we're going to need to find that stability from elsewhere. And a lot of people might find it by resting into ligaments or finding other compensations with extension in the back or going into like a knee valgus position. So assessing all of those things can kind of point you in the right direction. And then, of course, there's a lot more that we would do in a more in-depth evaluation. But hip instability can actually be very common in newborns. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a full-blown hip dysplasia. But newborns, babies, they're also very bendy. Mm-hmm. They're like little gummy machines.
They're still forming.
They're still forming. Bones are still forming. Ligaments and tendons are starting to mature. So a lot of infants can start out with some degree of hip instability.
It was like 1 in 6 newborns, which to me sounds really, really high. But then we take a step back and only 3 in 1,000 newborns actually require surgery for hip dysplasia. Yeah. So in the long scheme of things, it doesn't seem too extremely bad. And especially with hip instability, we've talked about other podcasts, what we can really do to help strengthen and provide support for that hip. But we really want to understand and kind of get to a baseline of how do we support instability then even as a newborn is developing, and what kind of things can we start to look out for? Because when we have this shallow socket and we don't just have, you know, that good congruent structure anymore with that ball and socket joint. And so we're putting a lot more pressures into the bones and the cartilage and how we're loading that joint. And so there could be a lot of inflammation that starts to happen over time, mm-hmm. a lot less range of motion, just pain with activities, especially weight-bearing activities. So anything where you're having to load that joint.
You'll notice a lot of people who will end up having labral issues or labral tears. The labrum, we did a podcast on, mm-hmm. on the hip labrum. Is the labrum's essentially the lining around that acetabulum, so around the socket to kind of help with that pressure and kind of suction cupping the acetabulum onto the femoral head. So if it's not a very good fit, there might be a lot of extra movement. There might be a lot of kind of damage or pressure into that labrum as well.
Right. And we're seeing that, you know, fortunately, it's 4 times more common in females than it is in males.
Did you say fortunately?
I said unfortunately.
Oh, I thought you were like, fortunately, no. It's much more common in females.
No, it should be a little bit more even, but unfortunately, I'm not saying that clearly enough, we have things like estrogen. So even in a fetus, in a female fetus, if they have more estrogen, they have a little bit more laxity within their ligaments. And what was the other thing? Oh, a lot more females are born breech.
Yeah.
And so even just having that where, you know, your bottom is kind of coming down instead of your head, when you're sitting in that breech position, it could put a lot of hyperextension on the knees and then put that, and then put a lot of pressure into that hip joint itself. So.
And other things we want to look at, because like a lot of this can happen in utero.
Yeah.
So it's the development of the acetabulum as the baby's inside the body. And that's not necessarily something that we can have direct impact over. Of course, you can take all your supplements and your vitamins and make
you
sure that your body has the right building blocks, but things can happen that we don't have control over. So then once baby's in the real world, what can we do to support that? Because our baby's rapidly growing throughout the first year of life. Mm-hmm. And so even if it developed in utero in a certain way, like how can we then try and influence the development of these structures in a way that can be supportive, even if there might be that baseline instability?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's where we want to really make sure that we're kind of staying away and managing extreme positions with the hips. And development, remember, it's happening up until you're in puberty, essentially. So, and especially when we're young, when we're babies, infants, and then growing to 1 to 2 years old and going to start to walk, before we start getting into that walking phase, especially, we want to make sure that we're supporting the hips and we're supporting the body. And there's a lot of devices, and we actually talked about this with the Movement Mama, Kaylee, who is a pediatric physical therapist. So you can go back and listen to that episode 157. Episode 157. She talked a lot about, you know, how to maintain this healthy development in kids and make sure that we're kind of staying away from devices that might put the hips into extreme ranges that we don't want to as they're continuing on the developmental journey.
Yeah, I think that like the early message that these companies tried using was like, oh, it can help get your child upright. It can help get them into weight-bearing positions. But in reality, a lot of them, what they do is they put the legs into more or less an unnatural position. So yeah, it might be weight-bearing, but it's not natural and it's not the natural development or progression that a baby will normally go through.
Well, and just on that note too, like if we're talking about weight-bearing, we have to understand the way that a baby develops, right? Why are we getting them weight bearing and jumping? That's like the one, that's the hardest. Every time I see that, and I see friends that have it, I'm not going to say anything. However, you know, that does put a lot of pressure and demand and load on a hip that isn't ready to take that load. If your baby is in a device that's pushing off of the ground and jumping before it even has the ability to walk yet, we're just
putting... Or if it's barely crawling.
Right. We're just putting unnecessary load at that hip.
Yeah. So avoiding those extreme ranges. And I mean, I don't know if I'm remembering this incorrectly, but even when we talked with Movement Mama on our podcast, she kind of said like, it's tough as a parent.
It is.
And sometimes you don't... Sometimes you don't feel like you have another option other than putting them in something to be able to entertain them, entertain themselves, or just have a minute to make dinner, like without needing to worry about holding the baby or having the baby crawl off or something. So again, if you are going to be using these devices, like how can you just break it up? How can you, they be in there for 5-10 minutes and then you can take them out and let them crawl for a minute. And then, so avoiding those extreme ranges, especially for extended periods of times, because those first 2, 3, 4 years are so vital to the development of our soft tissues, our bones, our muscles, and our tendons.
Yeah, and we just want to make sure that the hips are loading in a way that's going to be best for their natural development. And even, I mean, they research talked to even into the extreme swaddling position. So obviously we want to swaddle the kid, you know, and to each their own on this. I know there's a lot of like how much and how often, and every mama is going to have their own journey with this and do your own research. However, if you're really putting those legs, because in a swaddle, their legs are together, right? But if they are closer together, that it's creating not only a natural position, but now you're kind of pushing them together and they're in extreme extension. So it's that extension and adduction where their legs really come together in a really tight position and they're in there like that for extended periods of time. That's where it could potentially start to cause some abnormality just as you're forming within the hip joint.
Yeah. And I think one thing about hip dysplasia that's interesting is a lot of people might not realize or might not be diagnosed with this until even later in life, like yes, in adolescence, but I've heard of people in their 20s or 30s, like who finally get images and they just had a smaller degree of hip dysplasia, but it has just caused a lot of extra pressure at the hips. And now they might be developing arthritis. I think it said hip dysplasia is the number one cause of secondary arthritis, which means secondary meaning it's not congenital, it's not caused by any sort of internal physiologic process, but secondary arthritis in people under 40 years of age. And so that's where people getting into their late 20s or 30s might start noticing a lot of hip issues, and then they might realize, oh wow, I've just never quite had the proper socket for my femur to go into or for my leg to go into. And then we realize now I have this a bunch of hip damage, or I have a labral issue, I've got some osteoarthritis beginning. What do people do at that point?
I know. I mean, a lot of it is we have to manage the load and the pressure at the hip, right? And so something that is going to be important if you do have hip dysplasia as you age is managing your weight. And that just is what it is, unfortunately, because the more weight that we carry on our body, the more pressure that we're putting on our hip. And
The more control you need, or the more control you would need to build up in the hip muscles.
And it is a direct correlation, right? It's that bone on that cartilage. We don't have a lot of space because it isn't in a good congruent little ball and socket. It's a little bit of more of a shallow area. So we just have to control the amount of pressures that we have. And then we do want to start to, you know, how can we get into treatment with a physical therapist, I would say, that is starting to progressively and safely start to address range of motion restrictions in a way that's not going to harm your joint and cause further damage, and strengthen in a way that you feel supported and safe within your body to be able to move into these activities.
Yeah, being a ball and socket joint, this thing can move in basically any direction. You know, they say we have 6 movements at our hip, which is flexion, extension, abduction going out, adduction or adduction coming in, and then internal and external rotation. But there's all sorts of combinations of all those motions.
And there's all the circles that we could do, circumduction.
I know. And so there are so many movements at the hip that we need to start understanding, again, especially if we're getting to the point later in life and we're realizing we have a degree of hip dysplasia, mm-hmm. where might I be limited? Which of these motions do I have extra of, or are the ones that I've been maybe using too much of? And then how do I find control within the range of motions that I have?
Yeah.
So really working on that hip control, because it's not about just gaining the mobility, but how do we have active range of motion and controlled range of motion through all of that?
Exactly, because then that can take us back into the activities that we really want to do. So, and working with a physical therapist that understand your specific goals, your specific activities that you're wanting to get back to is certainly just the number one key. And when we looked at research, you know, it is promising that 44% of patients, you know, choose to go, at least in this study that we looked at, chose to go the conservative route.
44% of the people who went the conservative route
ended up having
found it beneficial.
Right, exactly.
And continued on beyond that.
Exactly. And then on the flip side, 56% ended up then choosing surgery. So still did conservative treatment, then chose surgery and still had a good outcome. And overall, studies show that conservative treatment, whether alone or with surgery, so not just surgery alone, but conservative treatment, you have to do some physical therapy with surgery no matter what, or just physical therapy alone, you're going to have better outcomes in the end, no matter what you choose. So it's working with your physical therapist, it's working with your physician to see what's best for you. Yeah. But working with someone personally, I think is so key and so important, who understands your goals, who knows what you want to get back to, and can safely and progressively, you know, work with your individual body.
And this isn't to say, like, if you're somebody who was an athlete or is an athlete and now you're having these types of issues, it doesn't mean that you can't get back to those types of activities once we either really work on how to support at that hip joint. I mean, we know somebody who's an athlete who's been having hip issues type like this, and I think she did have a degree of hip dysplasia as well. I mean, she's still going through her journey, but she's absolutely planning on getting back to her higher level activities. Thanks again for joining for another PT Pearl all about hip dysplasia. If you love this or know somebody who has hip dysplasia or a little kiddo that might be dealing with that, please pass it on. Pass this to all your friends and family. Also, if you're willing, subscribe, leave a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. That really helps this podcast gain more visibility. And remember, we're going through the full body low impact plan 30 days together in the month of August. So you just got to go to the link in the show notes or type in jen.health. Start your free 1-week trial and get ready to join us on August 1st. We'll see you there.